If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us again today. Really appreciate you guys always listening to us and tuning in to hear all the knowledge that our guests bring and that Quentin brings, because Quentin always brings some knowledge. Hey, Quentin, how's it going?
Hey, good. How about yourself, Rob?
I'm doing really, really good. Really good. I just got back from the gym just like you, so I'm all energized and excited about our guest today.
Yeah, so am I. It's been a really interesting week last week with everything that's been going on. And I was just at an event with Benjamin Tall, and it was a small, intimate event, and it was great to get his insights onto the future, like trends and macro, and also just like what's been happening with tariffs. And it's like on and off. Everything is interesting.
But yeah, it's interesting. That's the right word.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm really keen on bringing these two guests in. They've done some amazing things, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, me too. We're going to get to them in just 1 minute, but first I want everyone to go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca. We got a brand new website, but the same as before, you can go over there and get in contact with all of our guests, listen to all the old shows, and then of course go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and review. And one more thing I wanted to mention is that I would like everybody to go over and check out our Instagram page. It's just Breakthrough REI. Because I put out a post the other day just inviting people who started in real estate but have branched out into other things, invited them to come and share their stories with us on the podcast. So I think that'd be interesting to hear some of those stories. Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know quite a few people that have been really successful in other endeavors. So I'd love to hear their stories too, for sure.
Yeah. So someone that's used real estate as like a springboard to get into something else, that'd be interesting to hear. So if you have or know somebody like that, get in touch with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it, Quentin. That's all the housekeeping.
Okay. So I want to introduce these two because I'm excited. We had them speak at Durham REI and they were spectacular. Even though it was their first speaking event, I think with that size of an audience, they did great. So I'm going to introduce both of them and then we'll get right into a little bit about their story. So I'm going to start off with Jude Gomes. Is an industrial engineer. He's an entrepreneur, a co-founder of Fergo Group. They specialize in commercial real estate acquisitions and management with experience managing a 300-unit portfolio, off-market deals. He excels in negotiation and value creation, and he is the founder of Task Tuesday, a virtual assistant agency serving real estate professionals. And he's got his analytical skills and engineering skills all together. So that's some of the stuff he brings to the Fergo Group. And Clientha Fernandez is a mechanical engineer, commercial real estate agent, and co-founder of the Fergo Group with a sharp eye for process optimization and operational efficiency. She ensures every deal runs smoothly. Her ability to streamline operations and tackle complex projects has helped establish Fergo Group as a leader in commercial real estate. Outside of work, she's a dedicated power lifter, applying the same discipline and resilience to both business and fitness. And her drive for excellence pushes her to set new standards and inspire those around her.
Very cool. Welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Rob and Quentin. We really appreciate it. And we're excited, honestly. So this is my first podcast. And then Jude's been on a couple, but it's our first one together. So this is exciting.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
And I got to ask you, as a power lifter, What's your like? Do you want to share any details
Yeah,
about
for
that?
sure. So powerlifting is mainly, so it's like your one rep max of squat, bench, and deadlift. And then at powerlifting competitions, you basically get three attempts for each lift. So like I guess my PRs. So my squat PR is 264 pounds. My bench PR is 121 pounds. And then my deadlift PR is 308 pounds.
Wow,
Yeah.
you could like lift me. That's insane. Well,
Yeah.
you better watch out, dude. You're in trouble, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you got started.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll start off with a little bit about how we got started, and then we'll kind of talk about now how we like source deals, how we find deals, and kind of dig deeper into that. So as I mentioned at the Durham REI, right? So the way we started, we kind of have to go back 4 years ago. Back when we were working in high school and university, basically everything that we earned, we saved. So Jude had a couple side hustles. He had his own landscaping company, worked at warehouses. I was a lifeguard, worked at warehouses. So basically all the money we earned, we just saved it. No fancy cars, nothing. Didn't have no family inheritance, right? So we had to basically, it was just the two of us. And then once we started dating, we realized that we had kind of like a shared vision of creating something for ourselves and creating something for our future. And then shortly after, COVID approached. And during this time, I don't know if you guys remember, but the gym equipment was a hot commodity and everyone was basically making gyms in their basement, right? So we started approaching basically private gym owners that were closing shop because obviously everything closed down. So they were selling off their equipment for super cheap, like pennies on the dollar, and we would buy it off of them and then sell it off of Facebook Marketplace, making a little bit of extra cash, right? And then shortly after that, we came across the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. And that's when we realized, okay, cool, like the gym equipment is great, but it's not gonna be like long term. So we put down the equipment and we started to look into real estate, and that was our end goal, to figure out a way to buy our first rental property. So basically after that, we started researching different areas in Ontario where we could invest. And our number one priority was that it had to be cheap, right? Because obviously we weren't working with a lot of cash. So it had to be cheap. But at the same time, we wanted to make sure that the city where we were investing had some sort of infrastructure and there was an economy, right? So we looked into Windsor, and that's where we bought our first rental property. And we saw they had a university, college, hospital. It was on the border of the US, Canada, people going in and out. So, like, okay, cool. A couple of weeks later, we firmed up on our first property, and then we ended up closing a month later. So that was when we were 19, and it was a turnkey property, put 20% down, went the traditional route. And all we had to do was put tenants in there. And back then, I'm sure you guys remember the interest rates were super low. So we were able to cash flow basically $1,000 a month. And we're like, holy shit, like, how can we repeat this? How can we keep doing this? But then we soon realized that we were tapped out on the capital because every penny that we had to our name, we put into that. And then at the same time, we had no more borrowing power, right? So that's when we started to kind of learn everything that we could, and we came across the Burr strategy. So we listened to podcasts, we started reading books, started going to networking events. And then we're like, okay, we have to find a way to creatively source these deals. And Jude will touch a little bit more about how we went from that to like finding the next couple of properties.
And what, when you bought your first property, how much funds did you have to be able to start this journey? Because
Yeah.
where you are now and where you started are totally
Yeah.
different. So how much funds did you were you able to bring to the table to get started
For
on this?
sure. Yeah. So I had 30 grand saved up and he had 30 grand saved up. So we combined our 60 grand and we
Wow.
had just enough for the down payment and closing costs. Like that was it. Like after that was it. Like we had nothing else left, right? So
Very
that's
cool.
basically how much we needed. And then yeah, and then we got financing and went from there.
So, did you
Very
ever
cool.
doubt that that was the right thing to do with that money?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And
We,
what was it
well,
that kind of pushed you through to decide that yes, it is the right thing?
like we automatically knew that, successful people invest into real estate or they somehow get their feet wet into real estate. So we knew that, long term, we want to have some sort of assets to our name. And we didn't know how big we wanted to get. We didn't know where, what that would actually look like. We just did step one. We just wanted to figure out how to do step one, and we knew that this is the way to do it. Worst case scenario, we still work our jobs at the warehouses, right? So, and also worst case scenario, if it's sitting vacant, there's no tenants in there, we can afford the mortgage, which was very low at the time. And but obviously, when we rented out the property, we were immediately cash flowing, and we were cash flowing like over $1,000 a month. So our goal immediately shifted. We're like, okay, we want to buy 30 more houses, and how do we retire from our jobs? And then our goals just kept
Yeah.
getting bigger. So that's how we, I
And also,
guess.
like, worst case scenario, like when we first thought about it, we're like, okay, like if everything kind of goes crumbling down, that's okay. Like you said, we have our jobs and we also were living with our parents at the time, right? So obviously the expenses are very minimized when you're living at home. You don't have a lot, like you don't have rent, you don't have like a lot of things that you would traditionally pay for if you were living on your own, right?
And what did your parents think of this?
They were scared. They were quite like kind of on the fence. They were encouraging when we started looking. They were like, okay, cool. But then when we actually did it, they were like, oh wow, like you guys actually did that, right? So they were a little bit on the fence. And like for them, it was more of like what happens if something happens between the both of us, right? So
Yeah.
that was where their concern came from. So we made sure to get everything done with the lawyer, get everything done properly with the corporation, like everything's like split properly. God forbid anything were to happen, then at least it's divided properly.
Awesome.
Yeah, very cool. And they don't do anything like that. Your parents don't
So
have
my
any real
parents,
estate investments.
yeah, so my parents are real estate agents, both my parents. And they like cater to like residential real estate mainly. So once we started to get into like the investment standpoint of it, like they were like kind of intrigued and now like they're looking to get their investment as well.
You're teaching them a lesson. That's
Yeah.
cool. Very cool.
Yeah, mine
Yeah.
were a little bit on the opposite side, like zero family and like investments or anything like that. And you know, it was a new concept to them because, you know, 19-year-old kid, like finish your degree, finish your school, then worry about everything else. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
that was their biggest thing. And then, you know, obviously they knew that both of us, we worked very hard like early on, and you know, delivering newspapers, random side hustles. They knew that we collected some sort of nest egg, and now we want to go invest. So after that point, it was pretty easy to convince.
You know, I have to say, like it's extremely rare for people your age at that time to have, you know, that much money saved up.
But even having that money, but then being able to take the risk to go out and apply what you've learned right away. But, you know, when I think about it, this is the perfect time to do it. This is the time that you want to do it in life, because you know what? Without telling, like most people wouldn't, but this is the time to do it. You can recover from risks easier. You can, you know, you're able to kind of pivot a little bit more. You have the backups of your family. Like you, this is like really. It's really amazing that you were able to do this, but I mean, this is definitely the time to do it. So, and you got to tell people about some of your deals because it's
Well, I
incredible.
want to know what was that first one?
So the
What
first
was
one
that?
was a single family house in Windsor. We purchased it for 310,000 and it was a 4-bedroom, 1.5 bath that was already renovated.
Huh. That sounds amazing. And you were able to cash flow $1,000 a month on
Yeah,
that property.
our mortgage was like less than $800 a month, all costs and stuff. Like single family, the tenants paid most of the utilities, so very little operating costs on that. So, you know, obviously the cash flow was pretty big. And the first one, we didn't have any experience in like real estate, what types of assets. We just said, okay, we'll buy a
Property
house.
management, none of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Contacts. And then after we bought the first one, then we started learning everything about the BRRRR process, renovating, adding value, mortgage. We didn't even know how to qualify for a mortgage at the time. So then, yeah,
And
we
let me
essentially, yeah.
guess, you have a copy of the property management toolbox?
No, probably not.
Back then, no, but now, yes, you know.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
You got to read all Quentin's books. Yeah. Everybody listening, go buy Quentin's books. How many books do you have? Four?
He's like six
Five?
books, I think, right?
Six? Yeah.
Six books, yeah. You got the
So
planner. No. Go wait. Just it's a little break here. Come on.
What are your books again? Tell everybody.
Yeah, it's the Property Management Toolbox.
That's a
It's
great one.
the Ultimate Wealth Strategy.
That's a good
The
one.
yeah, there's the investment planner where
That's a
you're.
good one.
Well,
Yeah.
thank you. That's really nice of you. Finding Property Toolbox, also the funding your properties, like I go through like the joint venture process, that sort of thing. There's all types of books. Mostly I have books so that I don't have to answer questions from people over and over again. It just makes it so much easier. And I put it all together so people can go out and pick them up, right?
Well, you have them because you have too much knowledge in your head and you need to spill it out. But
Well,
yeah, those are all great books. Can people get them on Amazon or
yeah,
where?
they can. All of them except one. One I only sell at meetings, and it's on the, joint venture process because it's something I prefer not to have on Amazon. But
Okay.
anyways, thank you for that. I appreciate it. But these guys, they are finding deals in unique ways, and they've created a whole business around it afterwards, which is super cool. So you got to share about like how do you find deals, but you moved from and maybe do it by telling the stories of your next purchases. So,
Yeah.
you went from the single family home to your was it sixplex?
No, so we went from the single family home to, so basically a year later, because we had tapped out on the capital and the borrowing power, we ended up selling the single family house. And basically, it wasn't really any of our doing, but the timing of the market, it was like the peak, and we ended up getting a good amount in our pockets. So after everything that we learned, we're like, okay, we need to do a complete 180. We're not going to go the traditional financing route. We're going to get commercial financing, and we're not going to buy turnkey properties. We're going to buy the shitty crack houses that have needles on the floors, that have all the smells, the animals, everything. So basically, after we sold the single family house, we bought a duplex and a triplex in Chatham. And for both of those properties, we were able to basically close with them vendor takebacks and private, like a short term. And then also, at the same time, we were able to get in there and work before closing. So that's something that we negotiated with the sellers to allow us, because of the condition of the property, to come in there and renovate the property. So the triplex, we were almost able to finish the entire renovation before we even closed on it. So then we focused on leasing out the units and then refinancing with commercial financing.
Yeah, so after our very first one, we immediately kind of realized that, okay, we cannot do the exact same thing that we did on the first one for the second one because we wanted to compress that timeline and get the second one a lot quicker. So we immediately pivoted to starting to source our own deals. And that was a big theme that we started implementing in our own portfolio because we knew that, okay, this was during COVID, everyone was bidding on properties. We had to somehow find our own deals and like meet sellers directly and try to pitch our own terms because just like Leanne said, we don't have the most amount of money. We have the skill, we have the hunger and we have the desire to buy properties and renovate properties and do all the work, but we just don't know how to, we just maybe don't have the most amount of funds. So then we got creative. We started using things like vendor takebacks. This is where the seller finances us a portion of the property so we can get in, do our value add, and then essentially exit to a longer term commercial type financing. And we learned the commercial financing is very important because instead of us, the bank looking at us as individuals, they will look at the property, how it's performing, how much income it's making, how much cash flow it's bringing in. And after that, we essentially only focused on deals which made sense on, underwriting and commercial financing. And then we kind of scaled that way and then found our own deals, communicated with owners, and then pitched our certain terms that we were looking for.
So communicating with owners, that seems to be the big thing. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so Clienta, I'm fortunate that Clienta is a real estate agent. She got her license early on to our investing journey. So we were able to use her tools and her, I guess, platforms to figure out who owns properties, how much they own it for, when they bought it, and then specifically target properties in the areas that we invest in, and just try to communicate with the owners
Yeah.
directly, call them, just figure out how
Yeah.
to reach out to
So
them.
basically, like, what we do is we like farm certain areas, and we'll choose areas that, like, for example, we'll just go on Google Maps and see buildings or like multiplexes that we like and that we think we would want to buy. And then basically with Geo Warehouse is what we use. So with Geo Warehouse, we're able to see who the owners are, if it's a corporation, if it's an actual owner, when they bought it, and how much they bought it for. But the creative part that not many people will do, and the thing that we spend the time and effort doing, is finding these owners and finding the contacts of them, right? Because most of them are usually older people, and like you can't just search up their name and find them because they most likely don't have any social media. They don't have a lot of things on the internet. So like Jude can give me an example of like how like he's messaged like the kids in the past, like he's reached out to like different family members, right? So obviously you gotta get creative in finding their contact. And then one like to for me personally, like I was trying to get a building owner's contact, and I ended up reaching out to the property management. But with property management, they won't just give their contact. So what I did was I basically said that I got this as a referral, and my client wants to use their property management services. So if there's any way that they could give any of their current, like whoever they're working for, as a referral, that I can call them and speak to them and get a good reference. And they were more than willing to give the number then, right? So it's just the way you kind of pitch it.
Yeah, you're
Yeah,
approaching
that's
it.
so much fun. You guys are having a blast, you know? I used to go, so I started out as doing wholesaling. And I used to go like do yellow letters, do the signs on the side of the road. I used to go to City Hall and just scan through all the properties and find out, like, I would specifically look for houses where the owner didn't live in them. So the owner had a different home address. And in City Hall, you can go look all that stuff up. So that was so much fun. And then tracking them down and getting the deal done.
Yeah, no,
That's
for
good
sure.
stuff, guys.
For sure.
So you moved from the duplex and triplex, and then what was your next purchase after that?
So the next one was the fourplex and the sixplex. Do you want to touch more about the sixplex and then the fourplex as
Yeah,
well?
so the triplex duplex, we finished that pretty quickly in the first like 4 to 6 months-ish. We turned that over, repositioned it, got it to essentially a nice commercial financing in the end, and then we pulled out our capital, and then we bought the fourplex and the sixplex, or basically around the same time. And the strategies that we purchased both of those, exact same thing that we did on the triplex duplex, two separate owners. We negotiated vendor takebacks, typically in second position, where we're able to essentially supplement our down payment. So both of those properties, you know, fourplex we bought for 340, sixplex we bought for 450. Both of those properties had
Jeez.
sec yeah both of those properties
Where are you
had second,
finding these?
well, same thing just
See,
directly with
they're
the
doing
owner.
that. They're working hard. They're finding the
Wow.
deals, right? They're not just, it doesn't just appear on the MLS, right? Like,
Yeah, you got to sit down at Tim Hortons with some of these owners and pitch your terms, convince their wife that we should buy the property.
yeah.
And there you go, you know. So that's what we did with the fourplex. They weren't willing to do VTB, but we had to sit down with them and convince them that, look, your property is in it's very distressed situation right now. So we're going to go in, we're going to renovate, add value, and then pay you out within a year. And then we ended up doing that in 3 months on the fourplex. And around the same time, the sixplex, we had the project going on the background because we had to get permits for that one. That one took a little bit longer, closer to 7 to 8 months. And same situation, second position, VTB owner had it several like a very long time, and then we took over the project. It was fully vacant. Both of these were pretty much fully vacant when we bought them. So it allowed us to be comfortable taking on that quote unquote private debt, and then close on the property with zero down and put our capital towards the renovations, and then refinance into
So
longer
if
term commercial
everyone's
land.
listening, the key phrase that he just said was closed on the property with zero down. That's what you just said.
That's what I said. Yes.
Yes, but the other piece is that they were investing all the money that they would have put down into the renovations of the property. And that's what
Correct.
gave the owners who were in like a VTB or in a second position comfort. And the track record that they've already done so, right?
And it's also building rapport with the seller, right? Like what happened with the sixplex, like this specific property, is that we had called him 2 years ago asking if he wanted to sell his property, and he said no, I'm gonna renovate it myself. And like he was the kind of guy, like he wanted to do all the work himself. We're like, okay, cool, you do that, like you know, like good luck kind of thing. And then, but we kept on following up with him every couple of months to ask him how the project was going, so that we just kind of stayed on the top of his mind. And then 2 years later, he approached us saying that he had some health conditions, which were unfortunate, and he could no longer continue it. And it was basically in the initial state than when he had started the project, right? So with that being said, like the 5 units were able to come vacant, but he was also able to understand that one, we've been obviously talking to him, so we're building that rapport, and he's seen us do the other projects that we were working on. But at the same time, he understood that he would need to give some sort of a financing for us to even like get into the door and get the project started, right? And he knew that we were able to do it, and it would cost him more harm if he were just to hold on to it because he wasn't physically able to work on the property. So, yeah.
That's very interesting. And then, so this sixplex and the fourplex, you were able to, after you did all the renovations, pull all your capital out. And then these two properties are cash flow positive as well, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Even after you pulled out all your capital, right?
Yes.
And
Yeah.
do you still own these properties or did you get rid of them?
Yes, we own. So yeah, we own. We essentially repositioned those properties. Very stable now. Pulled out our equity even a little bit more actually, and just because we bought it at very good pricing, not much holding costs as well. So yeah, so those ones we repositioned fully, renovated, and we're cash flowing now. And it's just a part of our portfolio. And we took the capital to the next projects.
Yeah.
And what was the next project?
One
Next project.
last thing though, before you go to the next
Go
project, where's the so you have the, do you still have the triplex and the duplex in Chatham?
No, we sold those ones.
You
We
sold
sold those.
those? Oh, okay. And where are the fourplex and sixplex?
So the
What
fourplex is
town?
in Leamington and the sixplex is in Sarnia.
Where's Leamington?
Leamington is my favorite market. Leamington is 30 minutes from Windsor, like 30 to 40 minutes from Windsor. And the really cool part about Leamington that like not many people know is that it has a Mexican consulate there. So they have a lot of immigrant workers coming in, and they specialize in like the greenhouses, and like that's basically what Leamington is known for. So they have a lot of workers coming in, and these are very like hardworking individuals that obviously need a place to live at the end of the day. And these tenants, like they take care of the property like it's literally their home, right? So like they're very very grateful that you're able to provide them with housing. They pay on time. They'll do our lawn, do the snow removal, and like they don't complain much, right? So it's like it's very good.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's cool. So
Hey,
now
wait a minute. Wait a minute. You have your tenants do what? Which one is that in Leamington?
the
Fourplex.
fourplex.
The fourplex, and they're all
Yes.
clearing their own snow.
Yep. And lawn. Yep.
Yeah, I can tell Rob's already impressed. So there's
I'm
that.
very impressed.
Yeah,
I'm very
but
impressed.
wait, you're not a, watch this. Okay,
What?
so you've taken this, you've gone from the sixplex now, you pulled your capital out, and then what do you do next?
So we then got into a 10-plex that sits on 6 acres of land. So that was our next purchase. And that actually came through building connections with our power team. So our property manager in Sarnia for the sixplex. So she knew that this was going to be listed eventually, and she kind of had some insider on it. So she sent it over to us because she knew how we would be able to turn it over and like the work that we've done. And then basically we were able to go in there before it got listed and get it under contract and close on it.
That's awesome.
And
So
they
you
even
got.
allowed us to kind of like talk to tenants and like kind of work on that while like during the closing process.
And so with that 10plex, what did you do any creative financing with that?
So the 10plex, it was more of a, it was kind of an estate sale, I guess. The owner passed away. They owned it for like 60 years or so. So the kids took over. Kid ended up is I mean he's an adult. He's a lawyer, so he wanted a quick sale. So the only way to kind of make that work is we just got a significant good deal on the price, and then we just closed quicker. Not really much creative terms on that. We
Yeah.
just had to close on it with normal financing, and then that kind of put a light under our butt to kind of get the project done quickly. So
Yeah.
we it was almost fully occupied when we bought it. All the rents were probably 30 to 40% of market. And we went there, we negotiated vacancies with the tenants. We ended up getting the full 10plex turned over and renovated. And so there was a point where the full building was vacant for like 2 to 3 months. And then after 9 months from when we closed is when we f like it was building was fully leased, fully repositioned, and we took it to commercial financing and pulled out our equity.
All your
Yeah,
equity
so
or more than your equity? More than
yeah.
our,
well, to give you an idea, I mean, we bought it for 1.2, and right now it's worth like conservatively 2.5 million. So obviously, decent amount of equity that we were
Yeah.
able to
And
get. It's the
how much did
beauty
the
of commercial
renovations cost
buildings.
you?
I mean, there's soft costs and hard costs. So total, we spent about like just under 300,000, so 250 to 300 on the entire building.
Yeah,
And
and
then
it was
whatever you're
more
holding costs
cosmetic
for.
than anything, the renovations. Like, it wasn't super insane, just like flooring, paint, kitchens and stuff. Everything else in the building was good.
So you took this success that you did. See, the problem is this is like if you ever go to a movie with me and I know what like the end of the movie is, my wife must get so annoyed. Like, okay, but like, okay, so now you did this 10 flex and you got the capital back and you got more than what you put into it. I'm assuming you got like pretty decent, like maybe CMHC financing, 80%, 85, or
We didn't do
conventional.
CMHC.
Not CMHC.
This one,
Not.
it was because of the timeline, we were very quick with the turnover. So there's a minimum, I guess, holding
12.
period. So,
They need us to wait
yeah.
for a year. I think it is like, I think like 10 or 12 months. And we closed on this in March of last year and then refinanced by November.
Yeah. So
So.
they've changed the criteria. So you should you
Okay.
could. Okay, but that's good. So you're in the conventional. Were you able to, what kind of LTV were you able to get?
75%, 75%, 25-year M. We're cash flowing pretty well even at that. And then our I guess theory is that if we're able to make the deal work and the work deal is really good at these numbers, then with CMHC as a second stage refi or exit, then we can pull out even more money and be cash flowing even more than we are now. So that's our theory, and it'll be like a nice bonus in the future to us.
That's awesome. Okay. So you had this success in the 10-plex, and then you said, Glantha, Jude, we have done this. What do we do next?
Yeah. So whenever we know that like a project is coming towards its end, right? Like we're closer to the refinance, we kind of double down on like searching for properties and like searching for listings and like searching for what we want to get into next. So during the time that this was kind of coming to its completion, we actually cold called the seller of the 19-unit apartment building that we bought. We cold called them and basically went back and forth for like 5 months negotiating. What we wanted, the price that they wanted, the terms that they wanted, and the terms that we wanted, because we wanted to get in there before, talk to the tenants, negotiate these N11s, so that when we close, we're kind of ready to start the renovations and go from there. So that's what we did, went back and forth for 5 months, and then finally we put it on paper, and then we closed a couple months later.
That's amazing. What, so like maybe you could describe a little bit about the deal, like run us through this purchase, because like honestly, I've got to say that most people that I know aren't 23 or 22 buying 19 unit apartment buildings. Actually, a lot of people at the meeting were all looking at each other like, did they just say that they just bought a 19 unit? And then Jude says, yeah, and I'm graduating like in another month or two. I got to go to my graduation. I was just like, oh, stop it. This is so awesome.
I guess the way we got more comfortable with these big numbers and these big units and these big price tags, I guess you could say, is because I just watched, like, after we bought our first one, I started kind of reaching out to apartment buildings owners, and I was fortunate enough to come across a mentor that owned several hundred units. So he was buying buildings, and he was he's in his mid-30s and just like kind of doing exactly what we're doing, but on a huge scale. And that taught me a lot, but that also like set the expectation in my head that wow, it's actually very doable, it's very possible, right? So we never limited ourselves in terms of how big we can get, and our age is just a number at the end of the day. Like
Correct.
any seller we meet, we try to avoid the question of how old we are. If anything,
Yep.
we try to avoid it. So this 19 unit building was our next venture immediately after closing on the 10-plex. For me, I just like to find deals. I'm a deal junkie. I like to negotiate. I like to like find the next opportunity. And Clienta is really good at the management and turning things over. She's good at what's actually important.
Well, let me
And
ask you
I'm,
this. How many, how many deals do you go after and, to get one, let's say?
like
A lot.
I
Like, analyze a lot of deals before we're like, okay, cool. Like, let's actually offer on one to quantify it. I think
So
maybe like
like It's hard to quantify it for sure, but the problem I guess we were facing and what we noticed was that we looked at everything for ourselves, like okay, every individual deal, like if it doesn't make sense for us, and keep in mind our criteria is very, very strict. So, but we didn't realize that, oh, there's 10 different other owners or buyers that would buy this property. So that's how we sort of made it into a business by essentially like any deals that we get that don't fit our criteria, we will assign the deal or essentially find a buyer for the deal and charge the seller a commission, and that's how we sort of made that into a business as well. So we're capitalizing on the deals that we don't take on. But yeah, there's like at least a couple dozen deals that we go through that don't make sense before one even starts to make sense.
And so with this 19 unit, what did you do? Like, was there any creative financing, or like how were you able to like maybe run us through some of the like this particular purchase?
Yeah, for sure. So it's 19 units. It's in Windsor. We Clienta told you the backstory. So essentially, we paid 2.7 for it, so about 142 a door. So the strategy here is we're going to be adding the a 20th apartment through the city with permits, and then before we actually closed, we closed very close to a 7% cap rate, meaning we actually negotiated seven vacancies with the tenants before we closed. So they weren't vacant on the closing, but they were scheduled to be vacant, and essentially tenants were being compensated. So we closed at a very high cap rate when the building was actually, in the area, and the quality of the building were appraising between the mid five cap range, right? So there was a significant lift before we even closed on the building. So that, the as is appraised value over 3.6. So we created that extra equity there to go and pull out later on down the line. So there wasn't any creative financing to get in the deal because we just put our standard 25% down, and then we like now we're in the
And
process
that
of.
came from the 10-unit refinance, right? So that was the capital that was recycled that we got from there. We put it down over here, and then we're on a bridge to go into CMHC.
And what do
You
you
just
what do
said.
you did you guys have you went to CMHC yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. What do you anticipate the value of the property to be when you go to them?
So like when
So
we
we got our
closed,
after repair value. Yeah, go ahead.
like when we closed, essentially as is value based on those extra vacancies was 3.6. So
But
that
you've
was
got
our base.
everybody out and you're renovating.
Yes. So that's
So
like a
what?
baseline of what we should expect. So 3.6 to $4 million in that range.
Yeah, I would say it's probably going to be closer to 4 million, most likely.
Do you know what? From a ballpark figure, looking at these numbers, you started off with 60K, and I want to
Yeah.
say that your net worth is probably above 4 million, 4.5. Sorry, I don't want to say it on the
Give or take.
podcast, but like
Yeah.
I have a feeling that like it's like based on what you've told. Anyways, I'm like, wow,
And
that's super awesome. Congratulations.
so did all of the tenants sign the N11s?
No, so the okay, out of 20 units, sorry, 19 units, 10 of them are already paying market rent. So we're talking 16 to 1800 in
Okay,
that
so you don't
range.
need them out of there.
No, we don't need them out.
Correct.
If anything, we want to keep those good people in there. So we focused on the few that were low market. So out of nine units that are low market, essentially seven so far have signed, and we're working on a couple more. So and then on top of that, we're adding the extra apartment as well. So yeah.
Now, how do you add an extra apartment? So the
So the
laundry
laundry.
room is actually like, I'm gonna say like 700 square feet, 800 square feet.
Oh.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. So basically, when we walked in there the first time, we're like, this is an additional unit. This is not a laundry room. This is an additional unit. So basically, like we were able to get our architect in there and like basically design the space where there's still a common laundry room for people to use in the building, plus like a one bed slash bachelor unit down there as well.
That's
Very
awesome.
cool.
We didn't
That was
mention that this building specifically was built, like we bought it from the original builder of the property. He built it back in 1979, and he owned it with his wife, and they built a bunch of other buildings, and this is the one they kept. Full concrete construction, pitched roof, really, really good quality. And that's why
And
there
they
was an
took
eight.
care of this property like their child. Like it was their prized possession. Like anytime someone left and they would renovate the place, they would put brand new stainless steel appliances in there. Like not even like secondhand stainless steel, like brand new stainless steel, right? So they obviously
Wow.
cared a lot for the property. So.
And they cared about who the property was also going to. There's been dozens and dozens and dozens of people that approached them, and we developed a relationship with them and a good connection, and they happen to be the same, Christian as well. So we related on that end,
They
like
were
connected.
Catholic. They liked that we were Catholic. Yeah.
And like the wife like was like, these are the people who are gonna buy the building. Even though the husband technically owned it, she said, you know what, these guys are the guys to we're selling the
That's
building to.
awesome. That's really cool. That's it's interesting how you and the thing is that most people don't understand that based on your like we're doing the same thing. We're adding 5 units to three apartment buildings, and they're
Oh,
like in the
nice.
next month and a half, we'll have completed it. But based on the cap rate that you're talking about, 5.5, and you add new income of what do you think you're going to rent that unit for?
So we actually rented, we just rented one of the one bedrooms for 1550. And then,
So this one, is it going to be like about 1550?
the new one.
The new
The
one.
new one, yeah.
Oh.
So the new one bed is 1550 and the two beds are around 1800,
But like
1850.
the 20th apartment, yeah, give or take, maybe a little bit smaller. So let's say $1,500, yeah.
1500. So based on the cap rate of the building, how much value do you add to the building based on that? Because people don't understand why would you want to like get rid of the space. But I think for this podcast, it'd be interesting. So how much value do you actually add to the building, Jude?
So let's say, we rent out this new space that didn't exist before. It wasn't an apartment before. We're adding income to this space that wasn't in, capitalized before. So now at 1500 a month, theoretically, this space is now worth $327,000 of value that we created. And I don't think it cost $327,000 to make that a unit.
Yeah,
So
so that's the value that we created. That's
and that's the
beautiful.
thing for like when it comes to like rehoming the tenants as well, right? When it comes to providing some sort of incentive for them to leave, people don't realize that. Yeah, it sounds like a lot, but if you think about the value that you've actually created, it's a lot more than that, right? Per unit.
You know what? You're absorbed more than like I talk to people about this all the time, and like people don't seem to understand it, but you both have grasped it so well. It's really good to see. I'm totally excited for your future. Like you've got so much potential. You've got so many years of potential to go. It's so awesome. So you like, oh man, but. You've got to have some like advice for people who are just getting started out as well, right? Like there must be some pieces that you've taken
For
that you
sure.
think would be really helpful for people.
For sure.
Yeah,
So
I
we
think,
both kind of have our own pieces of
yeah.
advice.
Okay.
What I would say, because I'm more of like a people's person. So it's good to run your numbers, but don't treat people like numbers, right? At the end of the day, there's more to the transaction, and it's building that connection with people and making sure that you treat them as a human and that you have a genuine connection with them, right? The deal is kind of like a byproduct of the relationship that you've built. Because if they trust you and they know who you are, they'd be more than willing to do a deal with you.
I think also one thing that a lot of people make the mistake of, especially in the beginning, is they try to overanalyze and figure out like the best possible way to do things and just look at every different scenario. But see, if we had that mindset in the very beginning, we wouldn't even have made the first step. If we were thinking about step 10. So analysis paralysis is definitely like a very, very big thing. Like people should just make that step and not think too much, and just get it done, because if we didn't buy that first property, one, we had missed out on probably significant appreciation, and if we just waited to go, to do more research or attend conferences and things like that. But we just said, you know what, this is where we want to go, this is what we want to achieve, let's just make that first step.
That's awesome. That's
Yeah.
really good.
And like when you're like, I just want to add on to that, like when you're growing and when you're doing something, like you're gonna fail at some point. Like you're gonna have your downfalls, but you've gotta get back up and basically just outlast it, right? That's one thing that we've
That's
learned
right.
is if we do something long enough and outlast the market, outlast whatever's going on, you will win in the end, right? You just need to be able to outlast it and like obviously analyze your deals, but take action. Because if you're not gonna take action on it, then there's no point of analyzing your deals at all, right?
Yeah,
So
that's it.
I wanted to ask, like, What there must have been, obviously, this is an amazing story, but there must have been some big challenges. And I just want to know what some of the bigger challenges were for you guys
Yeah,
and
for
how did you
sure.
overcome them?
For sure. So one of the challenges that we faced pretty early on was kind of like being a little too naive in the sense of like hiring people. So when it comes to like, we'll give you an example. So when we were doing one of our initial projects, we hired a renovation company that kind of seemed like they knew what they were doing and like were able to like articulate and talk about the projects that they've done, but there was no actual like foundation to that. And basically, long story short, we ended up losing over six figures in that renovation. Luckily, it was like it wasn't borrowed capital, it was like our own capital at that point. So at the end of the day, like I said, we have to make peace with it, right? Like we are obviously going through the legal process of it as well, but that's long term, as you guys know. So we had to make peace with it and just moved on and said, okay, like this was our learning experience. Now we know to properly vet these kinds of people because a lot of people will say a lot of things, but don't necessarily like their actions don't match their words, right? So that's what we learned from that is that vet people properly, go take a look at their previous projects, see what they've done, right? Get references, do all of that. Don't just trust people for their face value.
That's
That's a good one.
good advice for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, like I actually met Clientha at a private lending event before I even got introduced, because then I was like a friend of mine, Paul, introduced me to Jude, and then I was on the phone, and then Clientha starts talking. I'm like, wait a minute. This is the same person who was talking about the apartment building and something else before. Like, it's amazing how these connections kind of come together, right?
Yeah.
It's really cool that, and it's part of the due diligence process of people. Like, in
Yeah.
this business, there are lots of people who talk about stuff and
Yeah.
people who have social media and do a whole bunch of things like that. And the people that actually do are a small portion of those people. And I'm glad that I met you before and then, connected with you both together and had
Yeah.
you out, because I feel like, you're doing and you are, I can't wait to see what you do in the next year, because, I know what's next for you guys. Like, what do you want to do next?
Yeah, for sure. So we obviously want to scale our own portfolio and like we're constantly looking at deals, analyzing deals, right? Trying to figure out what's the next deal for us. But like Jude mentioned earlier, like the deals that ne didn't necessarily work for us, we were able to find buyers and kind of connect the pieces together. So that's been a big focus for us as well as creating a business around it. As we mentioned earlier, I'm also a licensed agent. So basically now my niche and my focus is multifamily apartment buildings all over the place. So we do Southwestern Ontario. We're also doing like in and around the GTA, like Hamilton area, and basically just connecting buyers and sellers together.
Wow,
Yeah, that's
that's
awesome.
great. You know what I think? Well, logically it makes sense. You went from 10 to 20, so now you got to go from 20 to 40, right?
Hopefully. Minimum,
Minimum.
yeah.
The
Yeah.
logical progression.
Well, you were talking about buying about 100 units in the next year, or am I mistaken?
Maybe I said that I was like feeling the dopamine on stage, maybe. But I mean, I guess long term our goal is to grow to hundreds of units, and I think we're at a stage where we understand the business model and how to manage properties. We now it's just simply just get finding the deals and putting the pieces together, so I guess that would be a goal.
And there's also like a lot of deals out there, just that deals that need to meet the criteria, right? Because there are deals where like you can invest in, but obviously like you kind of have to have some of your funds locked in for a longer period of time. And the deals that we look at, like we're trying to basically within a year to year and a half max, then move on to the next project, right? So yeah.
So
Oh,
we're
that's
guys, I
really cool.
want to thank you so much for sharing all this. It's been amazing. I appreciate you guys taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
thank you guys so much for having us. I really appreciate it.
Now, where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, so we try to stay active on Instagram. Furgo Group is our main handle, and then my individual handle is my name, Jude Gomes. Clienta is clienta.f. And yeah, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram or even LinkedIn. LinkedIn is just our first and last name. And yeah, I would love to connect with other people looking to get into buildings or even own buildings already, or just shoot different ideas off of each other. We just love this business and space that we're in, and anybody that own buildings, we somehow correlate or relate to each other. So it's just a nice small community.
Also, people who are looking to start out, don't be afraid to kind of reach out to us, right? Like, if you don't own any investments, but you're very intrigued by the topic of it, and like that's how it started with us too. We were just intrigued, right? Like, we're curious to know how this would work, and that's what got us in the door. So, if you're interested, you want to learn how you can do it, like, if you have family members that are willing to kind of work with you, right? Like, there's different possible ways you can make it work. So, if you're looking to get into your first investment as well, reach out to us. Not just if you already own buildings.
That's awesome. And your graduation, Jude, is when?
it's in June, actually. So my last exam. So today's Monday. Tomorrow's my last exam, actually. My very last exam, and then I'll be
Oh, that's
graduating.
awesome. Very good.
Yeah.
Congratulations. How
And
did
all of.
Rob, doesn't this like inspire the hell out of you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm so
Yeah.
excited. I'm so excited about this.
I
It
kind of
just
fell off on the Canadian real estate, and now I'm just like, man, I'm gonna go see what I can come up with and get
No, you know
back
what?
into
You
that.
can focus on US while we find the deals here. How
Well,
about
I'm in Costa Rica, so
that?
I've been kind of focusing there, but yeah.
I
I was
love
like,
it.
oh, there's no more deals in Ontario.
Nah,
There is.
there's always
If you
deals.
look hard enough, you'll find the deal. You'll create the deal yourself, right?
Yeah,
But
very cool.
all of their contact information is going to be in the show notes. So if you didn't have a chance to write it down or whatever while you were listening there, just go into the show notes and that'll all be there. So Quentin, how can people get in touch with you?
I love talking about real estate. If you want to book a 15-minute call, go to quintindesouza.com. I'm happy to chat about real estate investing. If you're interested in finding a great group of people and listen to people like you've heard on the podcast, come up to Durham REI. We've got events every month, and it's a great group of investors that are action takers and getting things done. And that's what I like. Otherwise, I certainly wouldn't do
Yeah.
it anymore.
And Quentin, you're pretty harsh. I know that you say, like, if you don't buy something, don't come to my meetings.
Yeah, well, what do I want to do it? I have a big portfolio myself, and I'm fine. I don't have to do it. I just get frustrated sometimes, and you know what? I want to see people that are like, I want to create a group where people are actually taking action. I don't want a group of 1,000 people that where two people are taking action. I want a group of 80 people where 70 people are taking action and the other 10 are trying to get it done. And that's what I wanted to do. Sorry, I was a bit of a soapbox. I wasn't much of an ending.
Well,
All right, Rob, how can people
I
get a hold of
definitely
you?
appreciated your pushing at
Yeah.
one point in time, you know?
Thank you.
And people can reach me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. Just send me an email. Go over to mantarayLodgeCR.com and check out our hotel that we have here. And if you're interested in coming down, then maybe that's an option to stay
Yeah.
there. So
I want to
feel free
come
to come.
down and visit you soon. So I'll take you up on that.
Sounds good.
Same
All right,
here.
everybody. I appreciate this. And to everybody listening, thank you again, and we'll see you next time.